Hello, Mr. Hurst. How are you?
I'm just fine, Chase. Thank you very much, and I'm glad you can be here today.
Thank you. So, to begin with our first question, the word natural, it's thrown around very often, both by the public and on labeling, and a coherent definition of the word is difficult to come by. What, in your opinion, would be a definition of natural?
Well, I don't know if I have an answer to that exactly, because it is semantics, and natural does mean so many different things to so many different people. You know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and there was a cartoon character at that time called Mr. Natural. And you've probably never seen this particular cartoon, but it was kind of a 60s-era hippie cartoon, which poked fun at the word natural and Mr. Natural and how Mr. Natural got by in life. And so I see a lot of things advertised as natural. I'm not sure I know what natural really is. You know, nudists believe that it's natural not to wear any clothes, whereas many people would say, hey, that's not natural. And when it comes to food, what's organic, what's natural, what, you know, when it comes to, and this is one of the issues that we're dealing with here at the city, medical cannabis cultivation. Some people say, well, medical cannabis should be naturally grown outdoors. Others say, oh no, indoors with light. Well, does that make it natural if it's not by the sun? So I think, you know, the word natural has a lot of broad definitions and a lot of broad meanings, and so we can explore some of those meanings, but I think it's kind of in the eye of the beholder as to what natural really is.
Certainly. And when do you feel the consumer trend, or at least the size of which it is today, towards words like natural and the targeting on labels, when do you feel that began to become really prominent?
Well, I think it's been in existence for since language was invented, because someone's always trying to sell something or rebrand something or make something more appealing than it normally might be. You know, you think about the history of corn, for example, and how it was naturally just kind of a wild grass in Mexico that had not been developed or bred for food production for folks, for people. And the amount of plant breeding that went into it, and do we call corn natural? Well, it's not natural if you look at its ancient ancestors. It doesn't really look much like that at all. But we would assume that most corn grown these days is natural until it's processed. And so, you know, the issue of naming something, there has to be some kind of standards or some kind of maybe organizational parameters as to what's natural, what's unnatural.
Certainly. And in respect to at least perhaps just GMOs or products or compounds synthesized from GMOs, when does it seem talk around GMOs and potentially the fear as well begin to be a public concern?
Oh, probably in the last two decades or so as consumer awareness became a consumer safety became more of an issue, the food scares of the last two decades, a focus on more healthful eating, a focus on trying to enhance nutrition, disease prevention. You know, as a Peace Corps volunteer, I worked on a number of projects to try and bring better nutrition to the villagers of the central part of Nepal, and so they weren't real concerned about labels or what things were called. They just wanted things that they were comfortable with nutritionally or taste-wise, and they were interested in improving their nutrition as well. So I think, you know, the focus on natural was something that the people have had for quite some time, because people want to have good quality nutritional food, but they also want convenience. And as convenience became more of a pressing issue, you know, Watsonville used to be the canned food capital of the world at one time. And so there was a lot of canning that took place, preservation of food through canning. And then the demand for canned food dissipated and the desire for convenient frozen foods evolved. And so now we've seen a shift away from frozen foods and canned foods into fresh leafy green vegetables with an organic focus. And so over time, markets change, consumer taste changes, the awareness of customers for health purposes and there again, convenience kind of drives some of these labeling and naming and semantics about what customers are really looking for.
And the word organic, unlike natural, that has FDA requirements that are associated with it. Could you, would you mind describing just briefly maybe a couple of those requirements, or at least how organic farming has played a role here in your city of Watsonville?
Well, Watsonville's always had, since its discovery, has always had fertile crops planted and harvested. And so there's always been a focus on crop production in Watsonville, just due to the proximity of water and rich soils and moderate weather that doesn't have one heavy extreme or another. And so the focus on natural foods and organic foods and the issues of GMOs, this lies more in the minds of consumers than probably those that are producing these products, although the producers always want to meet customer demands. And so as customer demands evolve and change with the times, the producers have found themselves in need of some kind of standardization, like the standardized organic production and the requirements that are placed upon organic growers in restrictions and limitations of pesticides, insecticides, different fertility inputs, and actually some processing and handling procedures as well. And so we've got a good history of agricultural production in the area. It's moved from the commercial, contemporary, mass-produced agriculture, which we really haven't had here like they do in the Midwest, but to a focus on primarily leafy green vegetables and fruit with a minimum of pesticide, insecticide inputs, and just, you know, producers struggle with trying to stay ahead, staying up current with the regulations, as well as figuring out what's coming next and how they can meet customer demand. And so that gets us back to natural and organics again, because organics are in the public domain. You see organic sections labeled in food markets and you know, all kinds of packaging, labeling, marketing efforts. So I don't know that that really answers your question, but there, it's a growth industry, and many producers in the Pajaro Valley have seen the light that the consumers have showed them, and signs that that they would like to be more green, more healthy, less pesticide inputs, less toxicity, and more natural, more organic, more fresh produce that meets a standard that the U.S. government has set out.
Hmm. And you had spoke on how consumer demand can drive what farmers produce. Have you, in your experience, ever seen farmers who are interested in the benefits of GMOs or any sort of genetically modified crop that were driven away due to consumer preferences?
Yes, I think that does exist, and it's a fickle market, and agriculturalists know that, and they can produce a wonderful crop of all sorts and sizes, but if there's no demand for it, there's no money exchanged, and they can't prosper, and they can't grow unless they have a marketing approach that meets consumers' demand. And so I think in many cases, conventional farmers saw the price differential between organic produce and conventionally raised produce and decided that they could maybe have less inputs and better management practices and have a higher price for their product. And so that led them to organics. I think in some cases where you have crop failures repeatedly, because you don't have adequate insect protection or you have insufficient plant nutrients in the soil, that it's hard to grow organically and it's hard to grow conventionally as well. But it kind of gets back to the marketing and where the consumers are at and what they demand and what kind of standards they have as far as freshness, cleanliness, and convenience too. That's always a driving factor.
And what effect do you think an FDA certified definition of natural would have on farmers within Watsonville?
Well, I think farmers would adapt to whatever constraints and whatever rules and regulations get pressed upon them. They should always have an opportunity to weigh in and help define what the rules and requirements and restrictions are. But in reality, you know, it's the public and the public's demand and the consumers that help dictate how things are marketed as well as how they're produced. And if there's a demand for natural products, however that definition may flesh out, and it certainly sounds like a good idea, when those standards become available, then I'm sure agricultural producers will see a market opening and there'll be innovators rush to try and meet that natural requirement.
Now, many believe that GMOs and any foods that contain GMOs should not be labeled as natural in this FDA definition. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I don't know. I think that there's certainly room for all types of food products in the marketplace, depending upon, you know, pricing. And, you know, I've been in so many different areas where they had food shortages, and sometimes you were reduced to eating canned vegetables, canned sardines, canned items that had a long shelf life, and frozen products too, where there was refrigeration at least. And so to try and zero in on where the consumers and are going to go with the GMOs and the labeling of GMOs, it's hard to predict. I think there again it'll be driven by consumer demand. Certainly science has an important role to play. Food safety is high on everyone's list. It doesn't take too much to contaminate a load of spinach or have some bad bug in the food chain that causes recall, and then you get customer pushback and rejection of products. So if the assurances of GMO produced products can be assured through science, then I think, you know, the consumers will start to accept them more. You know, there's a big push in Asian countries in particular about vitamin A enriched rice, a rice that is naturally high in vitamin A, but it hasn't really been accepted taste wise or as a nutritional benefit very widely, even though folks know that there's a lot of problems with vitamin A deficiency throughout the world, and how if there was a grain that can be produced locally and stored and utilized that had higher vitamin A content, it would actually help out with people's health. GMOs in this country have some fear attached to them. It may be rightful in some respects, but at the same time, you know, there's been plant breeding for thousands and thousands of years, and that's actually a form of genetic manipulation when you do even simple plant breeding outside of a laboratory, just in the field in selection and maintaining a line of plants. So it'll really depend upon the science and how full the science is, as well as how consumers react and how consumers, what they demand and the constraints that they place on natural as well as GMO products and conventional products as well. I think that there shouldn't be too much fear about natural plant breeding, but there are concerns about, you know, interspecies genetic transfer. We don't know maybe enough about it yet to really be assured that it's in the best interest of consumers and folks concerned about their health. But at the same time, great promises toward the eradication of hunger and malnutrition and diseases that could be help be cured through better nutrition.
So you believe GMOs do have a role to play within malnutrition?
Well, I think that they're coming one way or another, and that there's always research being done on producing plants and crops that meet customer demand, whether it's shelf life or enhanced nutrition or appearance. And we see these examples in recent time of better tomatoes and greenhouse cucumbers and plants that have medicinal components to them. We see that there's a push to do plant breeding, and it's an ancient art. And so will it be more laboratory focused? I'm sure. Will there still be a demand for heritage-type vegetables and agricultural products that have the genetic qualities of ancient plants? Yes, I think so too. It's a bold and interesting future in plant breeding, and you see that there's corporations that are putting a lot of resources and scientific energy and dollars behind their research, and so it's yet to be fleshed out and seen and entirely. Should we have a phobia about GMOs? Well, we should be careful about a lot of things. You know, we need to watch our driving and what we eat and consume and our personal safety as well. But that doesn't scare us out of going somewhere or maybe trying something new. We'll see what the consumers do and how the scientific community responds to human health needs.
And you've spoken of malnutrition, both abroad and with families here at home. And you had spoken about how GMOs, of course, could assist in that malnutrition, and how farmers who are interested in being able to produce more through the genetically modified crops are economically incapable of doing so due to customer and consumer demand and drive. So we can't help but make a connection and question the moral ramifications of consumer fear with GMOs. Could you see that perhaps this fear and the way it's prohibiting the use of GMOs, do you feel like that could have moral ramifications when there are families such as these, American families?
Well, malnutrition's a worldwide problem, and we have a little bit different problem in California and in the Central Coast, where we have a lot of obesity and diabetes that might respond better to improved nutritional inputs, regardless of what they come from, whether they're conventional or GMO. Nutrition's a weighty subject that I don't pretend to be an expert on, except I just try and practice good eating and a balanced diet And you know, I grew up with the food pyramid and three squares a day and a broad diet. And so what people eat today is overly processed in many cases. That may inhibit their health in some manner, but also their activity level and their exercise. And so we don't know what will evolve food-wise in the nation, but I think there's more emphasis all the time about healthy eating, about fresh produce, about nutritionally viable alternatives to what some people do consume now. Malnutrition is probably more of a problem in third world nations, which there are still many, and people don't get enough to eat, and some of their limited diet doesn't provide the kind of vitamin, mineral, and probiotic ingredients that they probably do need. So how can we have a better nutritional outlook in life? Well, education's a big piece of it. But we need competent and reliable education rather than just fear. We need a distribution network throughout the country and the world, which ensures that people can grow food locally or access food locally that is nutritious and is an abundant enough for them to, not have to spend their entire paycheck on eating. And that's the case in a lot of places, that people just don't have enough to eat because there's not enough money and there may not be adequate reserves of food that are available to them as well. I'm not sure I answered the question very well, but I think that there is a relationship between customer demand, education, what's considered good nutrition, adequate scientific research that tells us what we should be afraid of and what we should, maybe have more research and experimentation and choices over.
Certainly. Well, great. Thank you very much for your time. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Well, it's certainly my pleasure as well, and having you be able to come here today and talk to me and allow me to share my perspectives and thoughts with you. I don't pretend to know everything. I'm just an old guy that's been around for a while.
Great. Well, thank you very much.
My pleasure.